the 10 essential elements. These principles, these concepts, these values, these beliefs are really the essential things that every successful doctor of chiropractic I have ever met, every successful CA I have ever met, every successful student or entrepreneur or business person I have ever met, they're really good at these things. And it's interesting because there are times that I get to sit down with some chiropractors around the world and I ask questions. Hey, I'm curious, what do you think the most important things in being a star in this profession are? And you can't imagine the spectrum of answers I get. And I often ask the opposite question. What do you think you're missing in order to become a star in this profession? And you cannot believe the variety of answers I get. Because everybody thinks this is a really complicated thing, like there's 80 things you got to get good at. There are 10. And the first one that I'd like to share with you this morning is an unshakable philosophy. Our philosophy is our love of wisdom. It's our why. When we have a big enough why, the how usually takes care of itself. Why do we do what we do? Why were we chosen to serve with chiropractic as our vehicle and health and wellness as our objective? Why? We have an unshakable philosophy. We understand it at a deep level, not just an educated level. 9 years ago, when I had a health challenge, it would have been rather easy for me to ask some really bad questions. After not eating meat for 25 years, not taking an aspirin for 25 years, being under chiropractic care for 25 years, living a life that we would teach for 25 years, how on earth was a tumor growing inside of me? It was easy for me to fold and ask questions like, maybe chiropractic isn't what it's meant to be. Maybe this natural living thing is a ridiculous concept. Why me? Why now? How did this happen? It would have been easy to ask those questions. Wouldn't you agree? Most people ask those questions. But there's no good answers to a bad question. What I did instead is I stayed stronger in my philosophy. I knew that my body had the ability to heal from the inside out. I knew that there was an answer. I knew God would not give me a challenge that there was no solution to. I knew that. And I knew I needed to assemble a team to move forward, and I did. In fact, what I did is I raised my standards in my philosophy. I got adjusted twice a day instead of once or twice a week. Instead of eating healthy, I ate healthy and took 150 supplements a day. See, I doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down. What most people do when they don't have a strong philosophy is they go in the opposite direction. They lower their standards. I raise mine. So what I'm saying to you is it's essential, ladies and gentlemen, to have this unshakable philosophy. Knowing that you know why you do what you do and why you're here on earth. Now, this philosophy has to have FCB, faith, confidence, and belief in chiropractic. You either accept it in full faith or you don't. You either get it and understand it or you don't. And the most successful, the most fulfilled, the most profitable, the happiest doctors of chiropractic I know are unshakable in their faith, confidence, and belief in chiropractic. They don't care what the media says. They don't care what some people in society say. They know at the deepest level, inside every cell of their being, we're all better off subluxation free. They know that when a patient walks into their office, regardless of age or condition, there are a couple of things that they're absolutely rock solid on. They know that they're subluxated. They know they can find the subluxation. They know they can fix the subluxation. And they know once they fix it, the power that made the body is going to heal the body. Yes or yes?
Yes.
Another part of their philosophy is they have faith, confidence, and belief in the body's ability. The body's ability to self-heal, self-repair. They know the body is destined and designed for health and wellness. That anything different than health and wellness is an aberration. We were programmed to be healthy and vital and well. They also have faith, confidence, and belief in themselves, in their ability to find and serve the patient by correcting the subluxation and helping them with their lifestyle decisions and choices. and lifting them up in strong and noble thought and offering them hope and giving them clarity. They have faith, confidence, and belief in themselves. This is very important. So it's this unshakable, undeniable philosophy that drives the most successful chiropractors I know. Quite honestly, they have found a way to banish the doubt. They don't have any doubt. You see, they never walk over to the adjusting table and have bad thoughts like, I hope I can help this person. I hope I could find what's wrong. I hope I don't hurt them. See, they don't have those thoughts. Most of the time, they have no thoughts. They're not thinking. They're being thought through. But if thoughts do come up, the thoughts are always positive. I know I could find it. I know I could fix it. And I know they'll be better off when I do. And the last part of this unshakable philosophy is they have faith, confidence, and belief in their analysis. Now, we all have a different form of an analysis based on our technique, our practice philosophy, our personality. But whatever your analysis is, you know that you know that you know. Mitch Malley, do you think he doubts his analysis? Do you think when you meet with Dr. Versendahl, he's not sure? I'm not sure that he has ever said, I'm not sure. So what I'm asking you is to do whatever you need to do to form that rock-solid foundation. It's very hard to build a home on an unstable foundation. The reason we had philosophy night is because we want to help contribute to your rock-solid foundation, your unshakable philosophy. It's important to go back and read some of the green books. Have these philosophical questions. Talk to some other people in the profession who you feel may be at your level or stronger about philosophy. It's important to do whatever, quite frankly, you have to do to get to that place that you absolutely have certainty. The second essential element is this: lifelong commitment to personal growth and positive mental attitude. This isn't something we do when we remember, or when we feel good, or when we're not busy. This is a commitment to constant, never-ending improvement. I've shared with you in the past that when I interview to hire people, one of the very first questions I ask, and I don't care what level of person I'm trying to hire, I always ask this question: I'm curious, in the last 6 months, could you give me 3 examples of how you've improved yourself? And inevitably, 80% of their people, their eyes go to the right upper quadrant of their skull and they go, and I know the interview is pretty much over. And the other 20% of the people, when I ask that question, they immediately have a response. Quite frankly, I don't care what the response is. I don't care if they're volunteering in the local hospital, learning a new language. I don't care what the response is. I care that there is this commitment to growth. There isn't a day in my life that I don't work on myself. I could tell you that where I am in my life today is light years better than where I was 3 or 5 or 10 years ago. I still have a huge list of things I know I need to work on, and there are days that I fail in the process. Some days I spend literally 2 or 3 minutes, and some days I spend 4 or 5 hours. Some days it's exercising. Some days it's reading empowering material. Some days it's having open conversations with other people who I respect, how they see things and understand things. There's hardly a day that Dennis and I don't sit down and we talk things through. There's no two people on planet Earth more different than the two of us. So those conversations are always juicy. I already know his response before I start, because whatever mine is, his is the opposite. But there are many times that his perspective is more accurate than mine. I just didn't see it that way. So there's this commitment to personal growth and positive mental attitude. And this issue of positive mental attitude is very important, because what we've all discovered in life is that positive mental attitude will get you nowhere. But you can't get anywhere without it. See the world as you want it. Tell the world what you want. See the results of what you have and where you want to go. See your success in the future, in the moment. Focus on the things you want and not what you don't have. If our thoughts create our reality, ladies and gentlemen, and they always do, what are your thoughts? Are they positive and optimistic or negative and pessimistic? And inside of this, there's this commitment. What is it that you're willing to work on every day? What are your weak areas? One of the things we teach you in this issue of capacity technology is that you must work on your weaker areas. You all know what they are. I have a computer printout of mine. And it's alphabetized. What are your weaker areas? And I'll just share with you, for me personally, we're all different, but for me personally, what I discovered is when I worked on my weaker areas all the time, I felt like crap. I hated it. So the formula that seemed to work for me, it still works for me, is I spend about 20% of my time, 20% of my energy, trying to turn my weaknesses into strengths, while I spend 80% of the time accentuating my strengths. That seems to be my winning formula, because I still feel really good about myself, and yet I'm getting better every day. We need to recognize that personal growth always precedes practice growth. The reality of it is really simple. When I speak to a chiropractor whose practice is growing, I can assure you the doctor inside of that practice is growing. Had to happen. It's a natural law. I could tell you when I speak to a chiropractor whose practice is flat, his or her business is flat because they're flat. They're going through the motions. They become complacent. They become robotic. They're not thinking anymore. And when I speak to a chiropractor whose practice is going backwards, it's because the doctor is going backwards. They've taken on fear, frustration, anger, disappointment. And that feeds the fire of failure. You want to change your life? You got to change your thinking. When you start to accept chiropractic in full faith, accept yourself in full faith, recognize that our natural right is to be healthy and to be successful. That nature needs no help, it just needs no interference to be healthy. Success needs no help, it needs no interference as well. We interfere with the process. So clearly, we need to recognize that who we are always determines how well what we do works. This is why personal growth precedes practice growth. And we need to focus on exactly what it is you want. This is such an interesting phenomenon for me, because when I speak to people, I ask them all the time, hey, I'm curious, what are your goals? What are some of the things you're working towards? And almost 100% of the time, people's response is this: well, I don't want to work with those damn insurance companies anymore, and I only wish I could find a staff who will get done what I want to get done. And I let them go through that tape loop for a few minutes, and then I always stop them and say, I don't think I asked you what you don't want. You see, what I've discovered is people are really crystal clear about what they don't want, but they're not clear at all about what they do. What is it you want? How do you hit a target if you don't know you have one? It's not a very effective strategy. So what is it you want? What is it you want now, this moment, today, later today, tomorrow, this weekend? What do you want in your practice in the month of March? What do you want in the next quarter? What do you want before the end of this year? What do you want on every level? What do you want on a spiritual level, a prosperity level, a friend level, a practice level, a health level? What do you want? So you got to know what you want. And here's yet another issue about this. Some of you, when you finally get to that place of knowing what you want, you have some really challenging wants. You know, like you're seeing 100 visits a week, and by March 19th, I want to be at 800. Now, I acknowledge it's possible. Not very likely. So we need to have some realistic timetable, because a want without a timetable is actually not a want, it's a wish. What do you want, and in what realistic timetable? I want to lose 20 pounds by yesterday. Well, cut off your leg. Because there's no other way to get there. You could lose 20 pounds, but you might need to be realistic in a timetable about it. I want to run a marathon. By when? And then you train in accordance to that timetable. See, those are the parameters that we need. We need to be clear about what we want and when we want it by, and then we can develop a plan to go from point A to point B. What's required? Number three is having an emotionally charged and crystal clear vision and purpose. Now, there's a couple of components to this number three. Emotionally charged. Why do we want things to be emotionally charged? Because emotions open up the trap door to our subconscious innate mind. We make all our decisions emotionally. When things affect us emotionally, we take action on them. When they don't affect us emotionally, it's like art that washes over us. We need an emotionally charged, and I'll tell you how we get there in just a moment, and crystal clear vision and purpose. Purpose is our North Star. So when we go through this, we need to recognize the power of emotions. How you get an emotionally charged anything is you need to write down a list of how accomplishing what you're trying to accomplish is going to make your life better. And I mean down to the details. When I coach with doctors and they tell me that they want to grow their practice by $100,000 this year, one of the very first things I like to do with them is I say, great, let's project that we're 12 months into the future and you've now collected an extra $100,000 and it didn't cost you anything to get there. What are you going to do with it? Do you have debt and are you going to pay some of it down or all of it down? And if you do, how is that going to make you feel? See, the question of how is that going to make you feel gets to the emotions. How is it going to make you feel? It's going to feel awesome, like this black cloud is finally gone. What else are you going to do with the money? I'm going to put money away from college education for my children. Great. How is that going to make you feel? It's going to make me feel like a really good mom or dad. It's going to make me feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose of the most important job I have on earth. Awesome. What else are you going to do with the money? I don't really know. When was the last time you took your husband or your wife away on vacation? Geez, 111 years ago? Well, how about if you surprise him or her and take them away on a second honeymoon? Maybe you're going to go to this incredible place, fly first class, be on the concierge level, surprise them. What is that going to cost? Get the brochures, find out. And if you do that, how is that going to make you feel? How is that going to improve your marriage and your relationships? See, I get down to those details because here's what we know. Once you know where you are and where you want to go, and you've developed a plan and a timetable, and you have an emotionally charged reason on why it's going to make your life better when you get to point B, you cannot stop the process. That's how innate works to make our life more magnificent. Let me say that again. When you're clear about where you are and where you want to go, and you know the timetables and parameters to get you there, and you're crystal clear about emotionally how your life is going to get better when you arrive at B, you can't stop the process. Without a vision, we said the people perish. And when we have a big enough why, everything usually falls into place. Listen, I'll tell you, when I first got into practice, I had a really big why and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I understood what I was doing chiropractically, but I never took a business course in my life. I made more mistakes than I can ever tell you about. I don't have enough time today to tell you all the mistakes I made. But I overcame those mistakes because my why was so powerful. You see, I believed that everybody in my community was already a patient. Some had not come in and filled out the paperwork yet. I knew that every single person that walked through my front door, I knew I could help them. I knew I could help them regardless if they had a condition or not, because they had something bigger than a condition. They had a subluxation. I knew how to find it, fix it. I knew their life would be better off. See, I knew that. I saw myself as an adjusting healing machine, an education machine, a love machine. I saw myself in that place to really serve their life. So I hired CAs, not knowing what I was doing, not knowing what I was looking for. I was naive. I was 23 years old. I barely shaved. And I looked 17. I was still being carted to go into R-rated movies. So I would hire CAs. They'd go home for lunch and not come back. I built walls in my office, and 4 weeks later, I took them down and had to replace the carpet and repaint. Because I didn't know. I didn't know. When I first got into practice, I did upper cervical specific. I gowned every patient. I did a graph reading of their cervical spine. I toggled their atlas. I let them rest for 45 minutes after their adjustment. I got phenomenal results. Big capacity problem. Especially when you have a 1,000-square-foot office. Big capacity problem. So I started to improve the capacity. I stopped gowning them, And I did a graph reading and let him rest for 45 minutes. That got a little better. Then I let him rest for a half hour. Got a lot better. Then I realized, why am I being blocked by my own technique that's there to serve me? So I changed my procedures. And rapidly, I got to 150, 175 visits a day, every single day. Loved it. Was totally consistent with my why. My why was, I wanted to most profoundly and most positively impact the most people I can get to in my life. When I decided to sell my practice and join the Master Circle, it was still completely, totally consistent with my why. I wanted to most positively and profoundly impact as many people as I can in my life. My purpose has not changed. Number four, fully engage in your practice. Realizing that your practice isn't a practice because we're done practicing. It's your calling. So many of us are not yet fully engaged. Practice is our job. For some of us, it's our career. And for just a select few of us at this moment, it's our calling. But it needs to be for all of us. See, so many of us, we don't think very much about practice. We do today what we did yesterday, which is what we did the day before and the day before that. No, every day there's got to be an enormous amount of excitement, enthusiasm. You need to be driven. It should be like the best thing you could do with your clothes on. Yes, I recommend you practice with your clothes on. You should have this burning desire to see people. See, I always took the position whoever walked in my office was destined to be there. I didn't care if it was the mailman or somebody looking for directions. I knew they were subluxated. I needed to adjust them. I won some people over, made some enemies, but I fulfilled my purpose. See, I love practice. I absolutely flat out loved it. I loved meeting new patients. To me, new patients were a joy because I thought every new patient was potentially my next lifetime best friend. I thought every new patient was that next critical influence key that was going to refer 100 people to me. There was something to learn from every new patient. I love going through the process of processing every new patient to see that light bulb go off inside of their skull when they got that aha moment that they got the big idea. I don't need to be on drugs. My body isn't destined to fall apart. The flu isn't traveling up the highway as we speak to get me. See, when they started to get the above down, inside out philosophy that all power, all grace comes from above down and from inside out, when they got that aha moment, the room got lighter. See, I love that. But I also love taking care of patients for months and years at a time. I love seeing them evolve and change and grow younger and ask really great questions and shift their lifestyle decisions and refer in their friends and family. I loved seeing that. I loved it when a mom would hand over their 3-day-old baby with total trust for me to check and adjust that child. I loved it when the husband would begrudgingly come in with the wife who is now a patient and go, "Yeah, she forced me to come in. I don't want to be here." They'd look at me like I was a leper. "And what are you doing with my wife? Why does she love you?" And in a matter of visits, they loved me too. It's learning how to connect and deal with people, recognizing that we're in the relationship business. And those of us that are really good at establishing relationships tend to do much better. See, I loved that. I loved hiring new staff once I understood the process and mentoring them, taking them under my wing and teaching them and showing them so that they grew, they got stronger. I love to see the success of the practice. How many visits do we have in the book today, and did we top that? Do we meet our goals? Are we growing? See, that's the joy of practice. When you get infected with that joy of practice, when you see your practice as a calling, not as a practice, that's a critical thing for all of us. So clearly, we have to fully engage, because full engagement, diving headfirst, jumping into the deep end of the pool of practice, that always works best. Listen, let me ask you this question. You all have some patients that fully engage. They come in. You can't even slow them down. They want to come in 2-3 times a week when they only need, let's say, once a week. Listen, you don't need to be here so often. Oh, but I want to come. They always ask great questions. If you keep them waiting, they don't mind. No, it's okay. You're worth waiting for. We all have fully engaged patients. Isn't that correct? Aren't those patients the best? Well, why don't we personalize that? Because when you're the most fully engaged, life will be the best. The members of the Master Circle who consistently do the best are fully engaged. You get to define that level of engagement. How do you want to engage? But those that engage in life get the best results. It's that simple. Is it a job for you? There's nothing wrong about that. I'm not judging you. Is it a career? Well, it seems like a step up from a job. And once again, I'm not judging you. But I could share with you without a doubt that there's no joy in that. Nobody rants and raves to their friends and family about their job. Few might do that with their career. But when you have a calling, everyone who will listen to you, you tell them what you do. And work is fun. I love to work. Many of you know that a huge influence in my life was growing up in the DE world. And Dr. Williams used to get up on stage at every DE meeting and go, "Work is fun. I love to work." He'd make us chant that with him. "Work is fun. I love to work. Work is fun. I love to work." And I thought he was crazy. He is crazy, just like the rest of us who do really well. See, you got to really believe that work is fun. I love to work. Because the most successful people succeed at this, ladies and gentlemen. Somehow they blur the line between work and play. They're indistinguishable. Number 5 is living your life based on your values. Many of us don't realize this, and unfortunately most of us are not taught this, but the truth of the matter is that we're all values driven. Some of us are aware of our values, and many of us, unfortunately, are not, but there are values in life. Here are some of the key values for most people. And write down if any of these apply to you. This might be an important exercise. I want to be the best in my field. I want to have a strong business sense. My family always comes first. I love giving back to my community. My appearance really matters to me. I want to be a really good friend. Being smart is so important. I love being creative. Discipline means everything. I want to be empathetic, show people how much I care. Fairness. You can write whatever you want to write about me, but please say that I'm fair. It means everything. I want to have financial independence. I want to be generous. I want to have faith in a higher power. I'm a hardworking person. My dad was hardworking. My grandfather was hardworking. Hoffmans are hardworking people. I want to be healthy. I'm committed to personal growth. Honesty is everything to me. I need your respect. I like being funny. I like making people laugh. Imagination and innovation are the hallmark of all successful people. I want to be successful at work, a good leader, a great communicator. I'm always optimistic. I want to be loyal. Loyalty is a very important value. I want to have a positive mental attitude. I want to be a role model for others. My spiritual side is very important to me. I want to become an excellent speaker, and I want to be a great team player. Now, again, this is not a complete list in any shape, manner, or form, but it's a list to give you a sense of what some values in life are. We all have multiple values. What are the top 5, the top 10 for you? Because once we understand our values, once we're cognizant and aware of our values drive our decisions. And the people who tend to be the most successful and most at peace with themselves lead a values-driven life. What are your highest values? Because your number 2 value is more important to you than your number 6 value. And don't be guilty about this. You know, if you put your family at number 6, that's how you're wired. That's not right or wrong. It's not good or bad. It's not what I would do, but what I do is different than you. We're different. Let's celebrate our differences. What are your most important values? Do you make your decisions based on your values? And do you want fulfillment and inner peace? Because if you do, you must be cognizant and aware of your values and make your decisions based on them. See, this is a critical part of the software of success. The things that most people don't think about or talk about, but are critical. It's how we're wired. It's the track we live our life on. Where people spend their money is where they have value. As a chiropractor, part of our responsibility is to create so much value for care that money, time, and distance disappear for people. When we fail to deliver value, people come up with excuses like, I drive by one other chiropractor to get here, and they're closer. I'm really busy washing my eye and neutering my dog. I don't know if I can come in and take care of myself. $50 a visit? That would be like three drinks at the bar on Saturday. I can't do that. See, those issues show up when there's no value. So it's really important that not only are we aware of our values, but it becomes pretty simple and important for you to assess what your patient's values are. Don't just assume, and please don't assume that their values are just like yours, because most likely they are not. Number six. There are four things in practice that you must master. Again, I'm simplifying practice for you. Number one is you must master communication and specifically your report of findings. This is essential. So many of us have mediocre communication and report of findings. Be honest. I bet the majority of you go in and do your report of findings just like you did the last one and the one before that and the one before that and the one before that and the one before that, and it's almost identical to the one you did last year and the year before that. It's almost robotic. It's almost where you walk into the room and you regurgitate all over that patient for like 20 minutes. In fact, you actually say to yourself in your own head, I hate saying this for the 800th time. If you catch yourself doing that, your report of findings is not good. It's a hunch. It's a guess, but I bet you it's a really accurate one. You see, your report of findings should adapt to the person in front of you. Be personality specific. If you're talking to an amiable, you can't talk to them in analytical language. They don't even hear you. If you're talking to a driver and you come in there and you try to be expressive, they think you're from Mars. You got to match them, not you. What most of you should recognize is this simple, interesting concept. We tend to do our report of findings in our personality. So if you're an analytical, you'll give an analytical report. If you're an amiable, you'll give an amiable report. But only 25% of your patients are like you. So you get duped into believing that when one out of four go, oh, I wish some other doctor had told me this years ago. This was unbelievable. I'm committed to lifetime care and here's pictures of my whole family. You're actually duped into thinking your report of findings is awesome. Well, it is for 25% of the people. The other 75% of the people go, did I lock my car? Was that an x-ray of my knee or my neck that they were speaking about? I can't believe I have a vertical submarine. Because they don't hear what you have to say. So we have to adapt our report of findings. And let's remember that in this issue of communication, ladies and gentlemen, here's a cardinal rule. There's a lot of cardinal rules. The first cardinal rule is this. What you say is not communication. It's what people hear. So we have to go back and ask them, could we summarize what we talked about today? Could you share with me in your words what I just shared with you in mine? We have to get feedback. The best communicators interact. They don't just spew. Remember that over 80% of communication is nonverbal. So the best communicators do more than just speak. They're visual. They use visual aids. Remember that in communication, the one of the greatest certainty always influences the other person. You're not sure? Hang out with a 2-year-old for a couple of days. So there are rules to effective communication. Please learn them, rehearse them, practice them, get good at them. Listen, I'd be the first person to tell you that I'm weirder than a $3 bill. But I remember early on in my career, in between visits, I'd walk up and down my hallway rehearsing my report of findings. And I tried different types of reported findings until I was able to read my patient's face and their physiology and see what made them click, what made the light bulb go off. If they sat there looking at their watch, I know I wasn't getting in. They were blocking me. If I had them on the edge of their chair in a state of rapture with their jaw on the floor, I knew they heard me. So I kept experimenting and changing until I found what was most positive and profound for me. You got to get really good at this, ladies and gentlemen. This is the most important visit that will make or break your relationship. Those of you who have poor PVA, I assure you, regardless of what you think, and I'm being an optimist, your report of findings is not good. The second thing that you really must get good at is business and money management. One of the ways that I know that chiropractic always works is chiropractors are the only people I know on planet Earth that brag about the fact that they know absolutely nothing about business, and in spite of that, their practices grow. I'm a complete idiot on business. Like, that's a badge of courage. It is not. There are solid, important business principles. We need to know what they are. I ask questions like this. So how did you decide to charge that for your re-exam? I don't know. I've always charged that. That's not a good answer. So many of us pick numbers out of the ethers. Or through our testosterone or estrogen, we pick numbers. Or based on our values, we pick numbers. No, there's actually a business principle in how you pick numbers. And we need to understand those things. The third is leadership and team building. One of our expressions have always been, your practice is waiting for its leader to show up. Ladies and gentlemen, your practice cannot outgrow your level of leadership. Leadership, once again defined, is nothing more than the ability to influence how other people think and behave. Rather important skill. I can approximate that in the last 20 years, I've probably read 75 books on leadership. Gone to seminars, asked questions. It's a really important skill. And the fourth most important skill here is learning how to really be a master chiropractor by adjusting and healing people. And being open-minded in this process. It's not just, I'm a great body mechanic. What causes the spine to subluxate? What's the cause of the cause? Is it an emotional stress? Is it family stress? Is it their posture, their sleeping habits? Are they chemically out of balance? Do they live on ringdings and French fries and jump to conclusions and think they're well? See, what is it that we need to impact? And chiropractors, since the beginning of time, have been involved with lifestyle management. We just never knew to call it lifestyle management. You see a man with low back pain who has a 4-inch-thick wallet with his bowling card of America in it from 1936. You may say to him, stop sitting with that big, fat wallet in your back pocket. That's lifestyle management. If you see a patient with one heel completely worn on a 45-degree angle, you might suggest they get them rehealed or resoled or get new shoes, or perhaps they might even need an orthotic. See, that is part of our heritage, a critical part of our heritage, and something that we all should be committed to. This is part of what goes into healing. Number seven, it's important to lead what I like to refer to as a high vibrational life. Everything in our universe is vibrating. Looking at me is a vibration in your inner eye. Listening to my voice is a vibration in your ear. The desk you're writing on is vibrating. It just vibrates so slow we can't perceive it. Everything in the universe vibrates. So what causes us to vibrate at the highest intensity and the highest frequency to make us the most attractive? There are things like love and gratitude and appreciation and optimism and fulfillment and inner peace and leading our life based on our values that raise our vibration. And I'm going to urge you to consider from this moment forward doing whatever you can to lead a high vibrational life. Now, part of this is also recognizing what makes our vibration get weaker. making promises we don't keep to ourselves or to others, failing to do things we know we should be doing, cutting corners, pretending we don't know something, going unconscious, being angry, frustrated, disappointed, mean-spirited, cheap. There's a whole variety of things that lower our vibration. We need to try to resist those, avoid those, be conscious of those. And on the other side, that's good defense. We need to play good offense, and that's do the things that raise our vibration. Service to others. Unconditional love. Growth. Don't we all feel better about ourselves when we're growing? Doesn't everybody want to be on the winning team? We want to increase the frequency and intensity of our vibration. Love and gratitude are the highest and purest vibrations. These things will make you become more attractive without even realizing it. Number 8, become locked into your practice success number. Know what your practice success number is. Every practice has its own individual success number. So here's how we get there. In Stephen Covey's 7 Habits for Highly Effective People, one of the groundbreaking books of the last quarter century, Stephen Covey's number 2 habit is this: always begin with the end in mind. Begin with the end in mind. So for example, if you wanted to make $25,000 a month, that becomes your end in mind. Interestingly enough, if you want to make $25,000 a month, it's not because that's a number you picked out of the sky. It should be based on certain facts, like what's your overhead at home, what's your overhead at work, what kind of money do you need to put away to pay down debt or put away for your future. You should know what that is. That's why we do a financial master plan with you. So again, this is based on reason, not fantasy. But if your goal was to begin with the end in mind of $25,000 a month, recognize that there are only 3 movable pieces to get you there, just 3. The first movable piece is this: what do you collect per visit? Because if you know what you collect per visit and you're pretty much sure you'll continue to collect that per visit, you divide that number into 25,000 and it will tell you how many visits you need every month. So let's just say, for example, that you collect $50 a visit. You would divide $50 a visit into 25,000 and you will now know you need 500 visits that month at $50 a visit, which will ensure you your end in mind of $25,000. Movable piece number 2 is, what's my PVA? Because if I know how many visits on average I retain a patient, I could divide that into the 500 visits, and it will now tell me how many new patients I need every month, which is movable piece number 3. So for example, I want to begin with the end in mind. This is the second habit of highly effective people. And when I begin with the end in mind, if let's say my 500 visits, I want to have a 40 PVA, it means you need to average 12 and a half visits. So my practice success number in this example would be this: 12 and a half new patients at 40 PVA at $50 per visit equals 25,000. And you should know that number. That number should be more clear to you than your phone number. It's what you should think about. Be aware of, be conscious of. Your staff should be aware of it. It should be declared, not to your patients or your community, but to you. To give you another example, if you wanted to collect $60,000 a month and you're collecting $60 a visit, that means you need 1,000 visits. So we begin with the end in mind, 60,000. We divide in movable piece number 1, my collection per visit, in this case, $60. Tells us we need 1,000 visits. Let's say you have a 50 PVA. You then divide movable piece number 2, the 50 PVA, into 1,000 visits, and it tells you you need movable piece number 3, how many new patients? 50 goes into 1,000 how many times? 20. And in this case, my practice success number would be 50 PVA at 20 new patients at $60 collected per visit equals my end in mind, $60,000. You should be aware of that and locked into it. And then we can go even further, because once I know in one of these metaphors that my goal is 500 visits for the month, I'm going to look up and see how many days I'm going to work this month. And let's say I'm going to work 17 days. I divide 17 into 500, and I now know exactly how many visits I need every day. And if my afternoon tends to be a little bit busier than my morning, I'm going to figure out that maybe 60% of those visits every day are in the afternoon and 40% of those visits every day are in the morning, and I know exactly what I need per shift. And the goal of 500 visits a month in this example stays that way all year long. What changes is the visits per day and per shift based on how many days I work during that month. Some months I work more days, some months I work less days. That will affect the number. And now all I really need to focus on is my number. Could I get 12.5 new patients or more every month on average? Could I maintain a 40 PVA or better going forward? Can I continue collecting at least $50 per visit? And the number of visits and the number of income will take care of themselves. Now, one of the things I've noticed is that there's a huge difference between being a historian and being a visionary. You see, what most people do is they don't set goals. Big mistake. Another thing people do is they set outrageous, unrealistic goals. Big mistake. But even the people who set good goals, proper goals, they make another mistake by doing this. They check up on their goal at the end of the day, end of the week, end of the month, end of the year, and they only have two possible responses. You know what those are? Oh, great. Oh, crap. But there's nothing you could do about it anymore because you are doing nothing more than now reporting history. It's similar to an accountant. An accountant comes in once a year and comes back and reports to you what you've already done. You can't do anything about it. I'd much rather you assume the position of being a visionary instead of a historian by deciding in advance what you want to do, being aware of it through the process, and making whatever course corrections are necessary to ensure you get to your end in mind. That would be like a financial planner versus an accountant. So shift from being a historian to a visionary. And there is power in having a daily target. Instead of showing up in your office and putting the lights on and going, hope today's a good day, why don't you show up in your office knowing exactly how many visits you need to accomplish today? Stretch yourself. What's your goal? Number 9 is always expanding your capacity. It's being able to have a bigger practice that can handle more. This is really, really important as well. We need to make room for growth by increasing our capacity. You see, if you want bigger numbers but do everything exactly the same, where are those people fitting into? How do you pour the 9th ounce into an 8-ounce glass? So we may have to change our speed, our behavior, our hours, our appointment book, our talking. There's a variety of things we might need to change. If we look in the guidebook, it tells us that in capacity technology, there's capacity by procedure and capacity by concept and vision. Let me tell you a secret. You ready? It's both. It's always both. You might be 60-40 or 40-60, but it's always both. Some of the things are pretty obvious. Some of the things are hidden. But there's ways to expand your capacity. We need to look at the speed of a visit. How long does it take you? I don't want you to cut corners. I don't want you to rush. I want you to cut out the fat on the visit. What are the 20% of the things that take place in a visit that creates 80% of your results? And stay focused on those. Stop talking about the weather or what happened in the ball game. Nobody cares. Your patients are just being polite because they don't know what to talk to you about. You're adjusting. Many of you spend 2 minutes to adjust your husbands or wives or children, but you're spending 11 minutes to adjust your patients. So I'm confused by that. Is your family not as important, or are you trying to validate your fee? Do what's necessary. Nothing more, nothing less. You talk too much. Your appointment book is not set up properly. Maybe it's just your energy. You got to put more of a bounce in your step, a bigger smile on your face. Have the intent that I'm going to expand my capacity. Number 10 is working with a mentor, a guide, a coach, to help navigate through this process, hold you accountable. These are also really important issues. Dane Donahue shared with me something called Pearson's Law. I had never heard of Pearson's Law before. Well, here's what Pearson's Law says. It says when performance is measured, reported, and analyzed, and someone holds you accountable, success and results go up exponentially. Let me say it again. When performance is measured, reported, and analyzed, and someone holds you accountable, success and results go up exponentially. Now, Peter Drucker, who is the father of management, who just passed away a year or so ago, Peter Drucker says, what gets measured gets managed. This is one of the benefits of having someone to help guide you and hold you to a higher standard. Napoleon Hill talked about the power of the mastermind. There are times in a coaching call or a confidant that you speak with or someone that you trust that you just talk some things down, clear up your thinking, clear up your philosophy, clear up your perspective, get rid of your self-sabotaging behaviors, your stinking thinking. And the purpose of coaching, most people aren't even aware of this, but ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of coaching is really pretty simple. It's to produce learning that generates change. If it produces learning and it doesn't generate change, it was failed coaching. It's got to produce change. These are all very important principles. So again, let me just quickly review this list for you. The 10 essential elements. Number one is an unshakable philosophy. Number two is a lifelong commitment to personal growth and positive mental attitude. Number three is having an emotionally charged and crystal clear vision and purpose. Number four is to be fully engaged in your calling. Number five is living your life based on your core values, being aware of what your core values are. Number six is mastering four parts of practice: your report of findings and communication, your business and management skill, your leadership and team building, your adjusting and healing. Number seven, consistently leading and living a high vibrational life. Eight, lock into your personal practice success number. Number nine, always expanding your capacity so there's room to grow into. And number 10 is working with your mentor, guide, or coach. Figure out where are the one or two or three or four places you need some help, you need to focus on, you need to work at, you need to become better at. If I can personally help you, contact me, email me, call me, set up a coaching call. Happy to help you. Speak to Dennis, speak to Barry. We're all happy to help you with that. But you've got to take action on something on this list in order to expand your ability to get to that next level. Because everyone here wants to get to the next level. Yes or yes?
Yes.
We don't even have to describe what the next level is because we all individually know what that is for us. If we're at this many visits, we want to get to this. If we're at this income, we want to get to that. If we're producing these results, we want to produce those results. We're always looking to improve. That's one of the most important things in our life. But the key is we lead a high vibrational life when we know we want to improve and we are improving. We, on the other hand, lead a low vibrational life because we lower our vibration when we want to improve and we get frustrated that we're not. So we have to produce learning that generates change. Critical stuff. Yes? Good. Did you enjoy that? Was that helpful? Did that clarify some things for you?